Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I am your host, Andy Proctor, and in this show, I break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Okay, everybody, welcome to Season 5 of the college football season. Like I said, I'm your host, Andy Proctor. This episode, we're going to bring you a film study for Utah versus Texas Tech, and then we will preview their fifth game against West Virginia for this coming Saturday. Diving in real quick, obviously this last week for a lot of Utah fans, very, very disappointing. Utah drops a loss, 34-10 to Texas Tech, on the Fox Big Noon kickoff game. Super disappointing to finally get a chance to shine in the national spotlight and to come up short the way we did. The story of the game for Utah, again, is just an offense that continues to drag, right? An offense that continues to be outshone by either the other team's offense or to be outshone by Utah's defense. You know, this was a game that many expected Utah to be able to prove themselves. Are they going to be good? Are they going to be able to produce offensively? Or is it going to be more of the same of what we've had for the last couple of years? Was the issue with offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig? And will that issue be solved, you know, with a new hire Jason Beck at the helm of the offense? Or is it more of a Kyle Whittingham issue? You know, I don't know that you can definitively say that. I would be curious to know really how much of a bearing Coach Witt has on the offense, right? Obviously, he's the head coach. The buck stops with him. So he's the one that should take the blame. But really, you start to kind of wonder, you know, how much of a leash is Coach Witt giving to guys like Jason Beck or last year, Andy Ludwig? So Devin Dampier, kind of a side story, he was apparently hobbled with an injury, an ankle injury. I think you got to play through it. I think you can't make it an excuse. I hate that a story like that comes out after the fact that, oh, by the way, we didn't let you know. We didn't put it on the injury report, but Devin Dampier doesn't matter. Okay. In my purview, Devin was 25 for 38, for 162 yards. Pretty disappointing. 0 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. So we were singing his praises last week that he had made it through 3 games with no interceptions and pretty consistent passing production, but he was just, this week he was awful. As a team, the Utes rushed for 101 yards total, you know, compared to they're usually rushing for, you know, 250, almost 300 yards in some of those games. We had no single rusher over 40 yards. Tight end Dallin Bentley and wide receiver Ryan Davis had okay productivity with 75 and 70 yards through the air, respectively. Utah also had 3 fumbles, 2 of which were lost to Texas Tech. Our defense played wonderfully through 3.5 quarters of the game, but eventually they crumbled due to fatigue. Our leading tackler was our safety, number 6, Nate Ritchie, which is both impressive from Nate's standpoint, but also worrisome from a defensive standpoint. I mean, Nate had 2.5 tackles for loss, which is awesome. He had 13 tackles total, but I never think it's a good thing when your safety is your leading tackler. You know what I mean? I'd much rather have it be a defensive end or a linebacker. Probably the most pivotal moment came in the first half when a 65-yard touchdown pass from Devin Dampier to wide receiver Jackson Benny was called back due to an illegal man downfield. The guilty party, team captain, and projected first offensive lineman picked in the 2026 NFL draft, Spencer Fano. In a post-game interview, he said that he got the wrong call from the sideline, believing it was a run play, which was so pivotal because Utah would then fumble twice on the remainder of that series, losing the second ball back to the Red Raiders. 2 plays later, the Utes would intercept the ball back from Texas Tech, only to then fumble it back to them 5 plays later. The teams would trade 2 more punts and an interception each until they would both convert on field goals to end the half, though Utah would require a roughing the kicker penalty to convert theirs, as the first kick was pushed so far right it missed the entire net. Which, by the way, side tangent, that puts Dylan Curtis at 2 for 6 over the last 2 games. I'm hoping that the Utes are holding kicking tryouts this week. Anyway, so that touchdown being called back was pivotal just because it halted so much momentum that the Utes could have had, you know, kind of going into that second quarter or through that second quarter and going into halftime. And, you know, overall, the offense just looked inept. They punted seven times, including 5 3-and-outs and one, well, yeah, 5 3-and-outs. They also had a turnover on downs. If you count that turnover on downs, they had 4 turnovers, including the turnover on downs, 2 fumbles, and 2 interceptions. One of the fumbles we didn't lose, so it didn't count for our turnover deficit. But, I mean, gosh, it's really bad. It was my greatest fear that Utah would get a lot of attention, get ranked top 20, and then get a nationally televised primetime Saturday game. And that was exactly what happened. So they've done it before, by the way. Back in 2023, College Game Day came to town, and number 8 Oregon rolled over number 13 Utah 35-6. It seems that Utah always struggles when the spotlight is put on them to win on the national theater, right? They typically play much better under the radar as the underdog. One can only hope that this weekend's game can be used as a motivation for Utah to stay focused, keep that chip on your shoulder, put your heads down and work, right? After the embarrassing loss on national TV, the Utes were dropped out of the top 25. And they will look to redeem themselves and potentially get back inside that AP poll top 25 as they face off against West Virginia at Milan Pusker Stadium in Morgantown, West Virginia. The game kicks off at 1:30 Mountain Time on Fox, which I feel like is honestly a pretty favorable time slot for them considering the fact that they just got wasted on national television. So, yeah, good opportunity. West Virginia. They are 2-2 with wins against Pitt and Robert Morris, but losses against Ohio, Bobcats, not Buckeyes, and Kansas. Offensively, the Mountaineers do okay. They average about 408 yards per game, which is good for 62nd in college football. They pass and run for about 200 yards each, which is 89th in the country for passing and 34th in the country for running, which is interesting because they don't actually... they don't actually focus that much on running the ball, which is interesting. They average 24 points per game on offense. Utah's defense allows just under 290 yards per game, which is good for 33rd in the country, and 14.8 points per game, which is good for 25th. So you've got an offense that is definitely going up, a defense that is more talented. A notable stat line, though, Utah is 112th in red zone defense, allowing opponents to score on 100% of trips past their 20-yard line. So if you get in the red zone against Utah, you're scoring. West Virginia, on the other hand, ranks first in red zone offense, scoring on 100% of red zone opportunities. So, you know, this should be an area that Coach Scally focuses on a lot this week in practice, is red zone defense. Defensively, the Mountaineers are top 60. They allow 322 yards per game and 21 points per game. If you compare this to Utah's 32nd ranked offense, which I'm sure was ranked higher before last Saturday's game, it's easy to see who has the edge. You know, Utah averages about 450 yards per game and almost 37 points. Again, I'm sure that's gone down. They are the 18th best rushers in the country, averaging 242 yards per game. So, you know, I'll save my deeper analysis for the end of this episode, but really, this should be a very winnable game for Utah. Let's talk very briefly about West Virginia's offense. So they run kind of a standard spread offense, a lot of stuff out of the gun. You know, again, with the limited film that I'm able to watch with you know, the limited time I have and kind of the access to the games that I watch, a lot of them are like cuts by the Big 12, you know, the condensed games you can find on YouTube. I didn't see a lot of under center or any under center or pistol. Basically everything was shotgun formation. Run blocking schemes. They run a lot of off tackle runs, outside edge or sweep. Honestly, they don't run the ball a whole lot. And if they do, they almost never run it up the middle. So at least they didn't against Kansas. As far as just the general scheme of their passing play, they seem to run, it's kind of like I said, it's kind of a basic spread offense. They're not afraid to throw to their running backs out of the backfield. They'll run some wheels, some verts, some slants, some posts, crosses, fades. I mean, everything. This offense truly varies its approach towards what kinds of routes that it throws. And I actually like that a lot as from a defensive coordinator standpoint. It makes it more challenging. If you're trying to see, you know, what types of routes are we trying to defend, you have to learn to defend them all. You have to keep your head on a swivel. You have to be aware as a cornerback, your wide receiver could run any route possible. You know, sometimes it's easier with, you know, for example, last week against Texas Tech, knowing that they like to get the ball out quickly. And actually, so does West Virginia. But still being able to kind of pigeonhole an offense into saying, okay, I know that generally speaking, you're going to run these kind of types of shorter routes, faster routes, things where the ball come out quickly. You know, you can get beat deep if you're not paying attention, but you can be more sure that you can focus on the shorter routes, right? Or maybe the opposite, right? Maybe a team, like for example, if you listen to this week's episode for BYU against Colorado, they love to run the big, long, sexy post routes and vertical routes and things like that. So you can kind of, you know, pigeonhole offense into their style. But with West Virginia, it's a little more challenging because they don't run one specific kind of route or you know, style of route. They run them all. So, you know, Utah's defensive backfield will be challenged to cover short, cover long, cover in, cover out, everywhere, right? Personnel-wise, from a quarterback perspective, they have an interesting thing going on. They have their starter, number 8, Nico Markiel. He's 6'2", 235, so he's pretty, you know, hefty. Not super tall, but he's a lefty. He's, so far this year, he's 66 for 98 for 720 yards. He's got 2 touchdowns, which isn't that many. He's also got 2 interceptions, so not great, but he does boast 67% completion, which is fairly good. He's been sacked 8 times for negative 44 yards. So he does have a decent arm, though. He can sling it when he has time. He's fairly quick with his reads, which was easier for him at first against Kansas because he was throwing a lot against man coverage. So West Virginia throw a lot of timing and spacing routes, meaning that Nico Markiel knows basically where he's throwing it and when he's throwing it, and he can get the ball out fast. Now, when he's pressured, he's prone to make some bad decisions, either to hold on the ball for too long or pull his eyes down and miss open guys downfield, kind of like Devin Dampier. So don't be surprised to see Morgan Scalley come after him with some pressure. He's not a great runner, so that's what I would do. As far as their you know, running from the quarterback perspective, they have number 13, Jalen Henderson. He is big and strong. He's 6'3", 227 pounds, and he does not move like he weighs that much. He's more of a runner. He had 80 yards of rushing and a touchdown against Kansas last week. Very fast, kind of sneaky fast, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he looks like he's running slow. He just looks like he's running kind of effortlessly, and yet he runs by people. I didn't see him really throw all that regularly against Kansas. He can throw, though, at least on the one or two reps that I saw where he actually dropped back. If I were West Virginia, they kind of did, like, you know, 2.5 quarters of Markiel from a throwing perspective, and then they did like a quarter and a half of Henderson, Jalen Henderson. If I were them, I would just do a 2 QB system and kind of run back and forth. Running backs, like I said, they don't typically use their running backs very much. If they do, it's typically through the air. Only one I'm going to mention today is number 28, Tyler Jaklich. He's 6'2", 223 pounds, so he's also a big fella. He's a sophomore. When he gets the ball, which is, again, seldom, he runs pretty hard. He's good size. He's powerful. He can lower his shoulder. I dig his running style a lot because it was very much how I used to play. He often opts for contact instead of trying to cut or juke into open space. So be on the lookout for number 28, Tyler Jaklich. Again, I don't get the idea that he's going to be, you know, very damaging to us, you know, with big runs or, you know, breaking into an open field. But, you know, he has the ability to convert on second and short, third and short, stuff like that. So tight ends, number 80, Grayson Barnes, 6'4", 223 pounds senior. He has 12 receptions for 117 yards. He averages 9.8 yards per catch, and he has 1 touchdown. He's their second leading pass catcher. So he's definitely someone that Utah will want to pay attention to. He's able to bring balls down mostly due to his size. He's able to be brought down if he gets hit low enough with, you know, decent speed and strength. Another guy, I guess, to pay attention to, number 84, Ryan Ward. He plays a decent amount. He's a little bit larger. He's 240 pounds, same height. It's more of a blocking tight end, so you don't have to watch out for him too much. Wide receivers, honestly, as a whole, I don't really think any of these receivers are anything to write home about, which is interesting because that seems to be where they are focusing most of their offensive attention. Don't get me wrong, they're all Division I like Power Four talents. I suppose number four, Cam Vaughn, should stand out as the leading receiver on the team. He's got 214 yards and 14 catches, one touchdown. But I haven't really seen much from these guys as far as their ability to create extra separation, either before or after the catch. No one that is especially large or fast or has that like that special X factor playmaker ability. They're all decent at running routes and catching the ball. I would think that Utah's defense should be able to defend them. As far as the offensive line is concerned, I don't know that their offensive line is incredibly talented per se, but they get the job done for the offensive passing strategy, being that the goal is to get the ball out as fast as possible, which is good for West Virginia because, you know, these guys aren't really able to hold much longer than 2 seconds. They do just okay with zone blocking or gap blocking schemes when it comes to running plays, especially in the middle or off tackle. They do better with reach blocking to the perimeter. I think when it comes to run offense, though, Utah could have a battle. In the passing game, I think Utah should put some pretty good pressure on Mark Yule, number 8, and I believe they actually will be challenged to stop number 13, Jalen Henderson. He's a good running quarterback, and we've struggled with that in the past, as we saw this last Saturday against Texas Tech. From a defensive perspective, they're pretty basic. They run a nickel defense, 4-2-5. They do something kind of odd, though. They do stand-up ends, which I kind of mentioned that last week in regards to East Carolina. They'll have, you know, occasionally a stand-up end. We talked about how that's a defensive end, you know, typically is down in a three-point stance or a four-point stance. It just gives you more leverage, gives you more explosion. But for whatever reason, West Virginia likes to have two stand-up ends on each end, and they play them very wide, like a 7 or a 9 technique. If you're a football guy, you'll understand what that means. If you don't understand football, basically, you know, your defensive ends are the outer part, the outer portion of your defensive line, and usually they line up just right outside of your offensive tackles. But these guys at West Virginia, they line up a couple yards further outside, so they leave very wide gaps. Most likely they're trying to get, you know, a good angle to squeeze down and create pressure, but it just leaves a big gap. So Utah could offensively could have a good day with that if they want to run off tackle. As far as their blitz or stunt packages, I didn't see very much from them in their film against Kansas. A lot of cover one for the most part. Occasionally they would do cover two, but usually that cover two was more of like a 2 minute drill coverage. So, you know, they'll occasionally blitz one linebacker. They did do one cool blitz where they had the entire defensive line slant. Let's say, just for this example, have the entire defensive line slant to the left, and then the two middle linebackers would wrap around to the right to just kind of create some confusion for the entire offensive line. Hopefully, if someone misses their assignment and one guy's able to get through, those were some of their blitz or stunt packages that we saw. They will run occasionally some 4-3. But again, it's all in the guise of just having, you know, cover one, maybe one linebacker, maybe two linebackers blitzing, but they don't get too creative as far as blitzing safeties or blitzing corners. Like I said, it's mostly man coverage, which we've said before, you know, you will typically run a man coverage against a team that you feel that you have an edge on, either athletically or conditioning-wise. If you think you're the better conditioned team, you'll run that way. So I wouldn't be surprised to see West Virginia come out and play a little more zone against Utah than they have in the past, especially if they're trying to confuse Devin Dampier, who has shown, you know, last week that he was not necessarily the greatest at going through his reads. As far as goal line or short yardage situations, they went down into a 5-2, which is basically five defensive linemen, two linebackers, leaves room for four defensive backs, two safeties, two corners. So they'll bring in an extra man to kind of toughen up that line when you're in short yardage or goal line situations. From a personnel standpoint, I think it's notable that a lot of these players are transfers from a place called Jacksonville State. I'm assuming that's Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know if they have kind of like a relationship with that school, much like the way that Snow College has a relationship with BYU in Utah. Either way, not a whole lot of notes about the defensive line. I kind of mentioned the stand-up ends. It's kind of interesting. The line in general, I don't think they're going to get a very good push up front compared. We always say compared to what Utah's offensive line can do. We've been talking all season about how amazing Utah's offensive line is supposed to be, but I feel like we have yet to see that. So kind of like I mentioned earlier, this would be a good chance for Utah's offensive line to show the country really if they're going to be as good as everyone has touted them to be. Their linebackers, their defensive linemen and their linebackers together, their pressures can be very undisciplined in their rushing lanes. Obviously, when you're rushing a quarterback, whether it's a blitz or just a standard pass rush from a defensive line perspective, you want to obviously get there quick and you want to get there fast. Sometimes you want to take the path of least resistance, but only if that helps you maintain what we call pass or pass lanes, rushing lanes, things like that. You don't want to allow a large amount of space for the quarterback to escape, right? So that's why, you know, defensive line play is so challenging and why there's a lot of value in finding good defensive linemen, especially defensive ends, is can they put pressure on the quarterback quick and strong and you know, maybe not only get a hand up to block a ball, but get through and sack the quarterback, but also doing so where they don't leave lanes open for that quarterback to escape. So doing all that in, you know, 2.5 or 3 seconds is really, really challenging. These West Virginia linebackers and defensive linemen, they will try to get to the quarterback, and by so doing, they will open up their rushing lanes, which would allow a running quarterback like Kansas's Jalen Daniels or hopefully Utah's Devin Dampier to scramble. Number 15, Ben Cutter, is a linebacker. He's a 6-foot, 226-pound junior. He's got 20 tackles and 1 interception on the year so far. Kind of impressive. He does get his eyes in the backfield occasionally. He gave up a longer throw to a backside wheel to the running back. He bit on a fake triple option. So there's some potential there. Number 30, Chase Wilson, 6'1", 230-pound senior. He's got 3 sacks and 1 interception. So you can see these linebackers, they get involved in pass defense for sure. Number 30, Chase Wilson's got a good motor. He gets upfield quick when he blitzes, which is common. He blitzes quite a lot. He's actually quite good with his reads. He's as aggressive as he needs to be. He's aggressive when it calls for it, quick to make his reads and just sit when he needs to. He's good at keeping his head on a swivel for any sort of misdirection or cutback. He's quick in the open field. He might not be able to chase down a truly fast running back or quarterback from behind, but if he has a good in-to-out angle at you in the backfield, you'll likely have to make him miss. Number 35, Reed Carrico, 6-foot, 230-pound senior. This guy, I think, is where Utah should make their money. He is a run-first linebacker who is quick to run too far upfield on his blitzes. He leaves lots of cutback lanes. He's very frequently late to his coverages, his pass coverages. You'd love to see Utah running like a stretch option to him, make him the read player, which what that means is if you're running an option play, the quarterback can either keep it himself or hand it off to the running back. A stretch option play is where, you know, hey, we're going to take someone into motion and we're going to fake like a jet sweep to him, you know, going horizontally. And that quarterback can decide based on what this linebacker, number 35, is going to do. If he's going to come upfield and try to tackle the running back, then he just pulls the ball and runs straight upfield. If he's going to sit, then you just hand the ball off and let the running back run right past him. You'd love to see Utah run that type of thing, force him to give up the kind of that off-tackle lane by being too aggressive. I'll be honest, Utah's offense doesn't have like a huge bounce back game against West Virginia, it's going to be a rough year. This defensive backfield, linebackers and defensive backs included, very undisciplined, or at least they were against Kansas. Almost every linebacker or defensive back got beat on some sort of misdirection run or pass play because their eyes were in the backfield and they weren't doing their job. Generally, they take bad angles. They're a little bit undisciplined in their rush lanes, which we talked about, in their gap assignments. The defensive backs don't strike me as particularly adept at getting their hands on the ball when they're defending. A couple guys, again, I think it's notable. I just mentioned this about Utah. Their safety number 5, Fred Perry. He's 5'11", 206 pound senior. He is their leading tackler at 25 tackles, 1 sack, and 2 pass deflections. I don't know if that's impressive or problematic when your safety is your leading tackler. He was ejected last week due to a late hit on a sliding Jalen Daniels. But I think it happened in the first half, so I think he should be back in play against the Utes. Number 24, safety Darian Lewis, 5'9", 194-pound senior. He's got 23 tackles and 2 interceptions, so they're both safeties are very, very involved. He is 2nd in tackles on the team. Again, I don't know if your 2 leading tacklers are safeties. That's probably a problem. Anyway, they've also got a safety number 14, Kikura Tarnue, 6', 200-pound senior. He's got 18 tackles, 1 forced fumble, 2 pass deflections. His eyes get in the backfield as well, late to coverage. We kind of talked about that already. A quick special teams note. West Virginia kickoff team gave up a return for a touchdown right up the middle against Kansas, and they did a good job of maintaining their lanes, almost too good of a job. They never really squoze down to block off the runner. And Emmanuel Henderson for Kansas took it 93 yards to the house. They also gave up a 44-yard return for a total of 137 yards on kickoff. I'm sure Utah will look at that. I'm sure West Virginia has already looked at that as well. This week is big for Utah's season. Since it's Ryder Cup week, I'll put it into golf terms. Utah just started the season with 3 pars. Respectable, smart, exactly how you want to start. And then they just 4-putted for double bogey last Saturday. If they can bounce back with a proverbial birdie, say like a 42-10 win, or a proverbial par, like a 28-12 sort of win against West Virginia, I think they can get their round back on track. There's no reason that Utah still couldn't run the table and get into the Big 12 championship and into the college football playoff conversation, I think. After this week, their next 2 weeks are at home against ASU and against BYU in Provo. Those are arguably their 2 hardest games remaining. If they can win those, I think they're likely right in it, right in the conversation for both, like I said, Big 12 championship and college football playoff conversation. It all remains to be seen. This is one of those moments where, you know, you've been punched in the mouth, and it's going to be exciting to see how Utah responds. Are they going to get back up, dust themselves off, and smile at that punch in the mouth? Or are they going to, you know, let themselves get really down about it? You'd love to see them respond. You'd love to see them unite as an offense and as a defense. You'd love to see them come out offensively and be really explosive from the get-go. Utah's always been kind of a third-quarter team. You'd love for that trend to go away. You'd love to see them come out of the gates and, you know, hang 21 points in the first quarter, something like that. But it's kind of a question mark. We're really going to see how it goes. I'm really hoping for it. I'm going to go kind of for the proverbial par I mentioned before. I think Utah comes out with like a 28-12 or like a 28-10 kind of win. So anyway, that's my take. That's the film study. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Go Utes.